One of the troubles with the saints is that so many of them lived long ago, sometimes in a world foreign to ours, and under circumstances so different from those of the present day. Many of them seem to have come from noble families, and not to have lived like the majority of the people of their time. Now I want to tell you about a young man, little more than a teenager, who, as it were, set a whole continent on fire. In a few short years, he covered immense areas in Latin America. Men twice and three times his age were anxious to learn from him. People without hope rose up. The spirit of the Crusader was born again. One who knew him said that he was a charmer and a fighter. His name? Alphonsus, better known as Alfie Lam. On July the 15th, 1953, a Trans World Airlines Constellation took off from Shannon Airport. Watching it rise into the sky was a group of priests and laymen. As its engines roared, they were reciting Our Lady's Magnificat. Aboard the plane were two men, Alfie Lam and Seamus Grace. After a few minutes, Alfie glanced at his watch. "Seamus," he said, "do you see? It's 9:15. Our plane is 40 minutes late." I mention that because it's more significant than it seems. These two young men were Carmelite tertiaries, and they wanted to set out on their Legion of Mary envoy ship on the feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. But there had been no plane. Now, the plane which should have left on the 15th of July was late. It left on the 16th, by a few minutes. But their wish was granted. They set off on the feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. It was just one of the many graces which their Heavenly Mother would obtain for them. Alfie was the 8th child of a farmer's wife. He was born near Tullamore in the centre of Ireland on June the 24th, 1932. At first he was pale and delicate, but never a killjoy, always ready for fun, and always popular with the boys and girls of the town. He loved rabbit hunting with his father. He disliked violence and brutality. His brother Jack tells how he once took Alfie to a football match. There was a scuffle round the goalpost. One player went to clout another. Alfie was almost sick. He said that the thought of one man fighting another appalled him. When he was 13, he decided that he wanted to be a Christian brother. He had the Irish Christian Brothers in mind. His family opposed this idea, but Alfie got his way. His mother said she found it hard to part with him. He entered the novitiate with 49 companions on Our Lady's birthday, September the 8th, 1948. He was given the name Brother Ignatius. He was a happy novice. He loved Our Lady, and his companions noted what a special devotion he had to her Immaculate Conception. It was in the novitiate that he first heard about the Legion of Mary, which had been founded 27 years earlier in Dublin. In 1949, he went to St. Mary's Training College. One of his classmates said this about him: "My first impressions of him were mixed. He was a strange boy in some ways, but very ordinary at the same time. He was never fond of games, never robust, and spent most of his time reading in the study hall. Our novice master used to treat him with a little more kindness and consideration than is usual with novice masters. Only afterwards did we realize why. Rather shy and diffident, he rarely spoke and made few friends. Three things struck me about him in this period. First, he was very different from others, set apart in an indefinable way. Secondly, he used to get many books from his relatives and friends, and all of them were on Our Lady. Thirdly, he suffered from many fainting attacks, which came at the most unexpected times and left him prostrate." One day, Alfie suffered such a fainting attack during a lecture he had to give. A doctor told him that he would hardly be able to stand up to the rigors of the religious life. If he stayed on there, he would be in danger of more serious illness. In fairness to himself, he ought to leave. What a shattering blow that was for the young fellow. He returned home and accepted an office post in a mill in Tullamore. Then he joined the Legion of Mary. At once he realized what a wonderful organization it is. Members of the Presidium, that is the local group, visited homes and hospitals. They recruited for Catholic associations, for parish work and functions. They helped the parish in many ways. They approached tepid or lapsed Catholics. The only special work they did was for the gypsies, who often stopped in Tullamore. The legionaries visited them in their caravan. The spirit of the Legion appealed to Alfie. He loved Our Lady. His idea was to give himself to the service of Christ through her. He saw in the Legion an ideal in no way less lofty than the ideals of a religious order. He studied seriously the teaching of St. Louis-Marie de Montfort on Our Lady's position as mediatrix of all grace and mother of the mystical body of Christ. The effect of this on Alfie was electrifying. After leaving the Christian Brothers, he had tended to be sad and depressed, but now all that disappeared. Cheerfulness and energy returned. He threw himself into his Legion work. The grand ideals of the Legion gradually impressed themselves on him. He used to think in terms of, as the handbook of the Legion calls it, welding all men together in high enterprise for God. The Legion's ideal is that every one of its members should try to be another Mary, serving Christ in all his members. He wanted to live in union with Mary. He was only 18 years and 12 days old when he offered himself for membership. He was now quite convinced that his vocation was to do more good in the world than he could have done in a religious congregation. Among Alfie's fellow legionaries in Tullamore was Tom Cowley. I knew Tom quite well and met him very often in Dublin. He was quite an outstanding character, a man with tremendous personality. Utterly sober and unsentimental, but full of apostolic zeal and always looking out for new openings for the apostle. It was fortunate that a man of this caliber took special care of Alfie. On their very first visit, Tom Cowley deliberately remained silent and let Alfie do the talking. Here was something on which the legioners specialized. It's called the master and apprentice system of training. The legion believes that its members are best trained in its spirit and the technique of the apostleship, not so much by reading, but by action. The Vatican Council decree on the apostolate of the laity stresses the same point. You can take a parallel if you wish. Imagine a girl being let loose as a nurse in a ward simply because she'd read books about nursing. What a catastrophe there might be. And yet, suppose she'd read no books, but had learned from other qualified nurses, then she could do great good. And that is the way the Legion of Mary works. It trains its members at its meetings, where there is a wonderful division of prayer and information and exchange of ideas. At the Presidium meeting, Alfie learned from others, but he learned especially by doing the work under the direction of the experienced Tom Cowley. His smile and cheerful remarks enabled him to make contact very readily with those he visited. It came as second nature to him. Tom Cowley met another outstanding legionary, Seamus Grace, in Dublin. Seamus had distinguished himself already in the Legion by organizing teams of apostles to work in rural areas during their holidays. This holiday apostolate later developed into what has been known now all over the world as the Peregrinatio Pro Christo. Legionaries giving up their holidays and, mainly at their own expense, going to faraway places, usually other countries, to work directly for the church and the salvation of men. They have penetrated into many of the red light districts of our great cities and have undertaken work that, by any standard, is called heroic. Well, originally, these apostles went to work in rural areas, and Seamus Grace was always looking for volunteers. As a result of Tom Cowley's recommendation, Alfie Lamb was marked down not only as a volunteer, but as a prospective team leader. Some days before the venture started, Seamus was sitting in the office in Dublin when young Alfie came in. He wore a green hat with a feather. Through horn-rimmed spectacles, his eyes looked so youthful, but so happy. Seamus, the teacher, was surprised. Alfie looked so young. Indeed, he seemed much too young to be a team leader yet. So some last-minute changes had to be made. The venture took them to the Diocese of Killala for 2 weeks. There Alfie displayed an extraordinary gift for enthusing others. He revealed special talents which amazed his colleagues. The following summer, he was a team leader and worked in the Diocese of Lismore. All this work for the Legion caused Alfie to make a decision. He would live in Dublin so that he could do even more and be in ever closer contact with headquarters. He realized that in the Legion of Mary he had found his true vocation. With him it had to be all or nothing. He hated mediocrity. It went completely against his character. So he wrote to the president of the Concilium, that's the supreme governing body of the Legion, "I have been praying and thinking for a long time about offering my services to the Concilium to do whatever work they would assign me. And as I am free to do so now, I hasten to offer myself. Of myself, I can do nothing, but just like my presidium work or extension work, I know that when I am sent by Christ, I can do all things." By this time, Alfie wrote regular reports to Seamus Grace, who had been asked to look after him by the Concilium. "I am more than ever convinced that living the Legion is living the life of our Blessed Lady. And the more one gives oneself to the Legion, the more one finds oneself in Mary," he wrote. It's worth remembering that expression, "living the Legion." It appears over and over again in Alfie's letters. It didn't mean just keeping the rules. It meant realizing the spirit of the Legion and then living up to it. In a few words, that spirit can be summarized as living in union with Mary. It means thinking with Mary, praying with Mary, working with Mary, seeing others with Mary, loving with the heart of Mary. It means, in a way, trying to live within Mary, so that we see with the eyes of Mary, and speak with the lips of Mary, and hear with the ears of Mary, and walk with the feet of Mary, and love with the heart of Mary. This was the ideal, and this appealed to young Alfie Lamb. But don't think for a moment that an ideal like this is attainable without a struggle. It is not. Alfie wasn't a born saint. He wrote, "How far I find myself from being what the true devotion calls a living copy of Mary. The pest on the cabbage resembles much, much more the beautiful butterfly than I do, our Blessed Lady, in this respect." Pride and human respect come so much into everything I say and do, that sometimes I'm even tempted to give up, to stop insulting her. I know that I will not serve by giving up, so I must continue, that the reign of Mary may come. Yes, that Mary may reign in all hearts. we need to pray so much and have others pray that she may reign as queen in our own hearts. In another letter he says, I am really very weak, but I know that Our Lady uses the weak to show her power. For some time past, I have made it a practice of reciting the Legion Promise daily towards the end of Mass. Every line of it is full of consolation for weak people. Now, remember that these letters of Alfie were written to his best friend. They weren't meant for general reading. Only rarely did he reveal the secrets of his soul like these. Such personal remarks are not generally found in his letter. Seamus Grace travelled all over Ireland helping the Legion in very many ways. Priests were impressed by his perseverance. A priest near Killarney one day refused firmly to have the Legion, but Alfie came back the following day, when it was teeming with rain. The previous day, the priest had said, well, you may come back, but I warn you that it's not much use. The journey was about 10 miles, and all Alfie had was a bite. Next morning, he rang again at the presbytery door. Come in, the priest invited. The day before, he'd gruffly dismissed Alfie. Now he offered him a seat. I'm converted, he said. There was a question in Alfie's eyes. Why has this happened? And the priest went on. You came out here yesterday in the slush and the rain, and then you went the 10 miles of road in the rain back to Killarney, and you promised to return here today. The communists work hard. But you people certainly do too. I have been thinking about this during the night, and I've decided to start 2 presidia in the parish. Alfie reported this to his friend Seamus and added, would that every shower of rain would give such roses to Our Blessed Lady. Incidentally, he was a born diplomat. Everybody would agree about this. He knew just how to deal with people. On one occasion, he was sent to a presidium which was officered by elderly ladies. These people refused to lay down their office. And younger people hadn't a look in. They could not prevail. The point at issue was tenure of office. The Legion rule is that no one is to hold an office for more than 6 years. Even after 3 years, a fresh appointment must be made, though it is possible to serve a second term. After 6 years, however, a change is obligatory. Those elderly ladies had circumvented this wise provision by pretending that there were no young people suitable for officership. But when they heard that a young legionary from Dublin was to visit them, they began at once to stir up resentment against him. Dublin is sending us someone to inspect our presidium, they objected. What do these townsfolk know about rural conditions? Nothing whatever. But they want to interfere with our doings here. The campaign had some success. When Alfie appeared, he was met with silence. The presidium meeting went on as usual. Quietly, Alfie counted on his fingers each violation of the rule. Soon his right hand didn't suffice, neither did his left. When the meeting was over, he counted 15. Does our visitor from Dublin wish to make a remark? The elderly president asked when the concluding prayer had been said. The involuntary emphasis on the word Dublin didn't escape Alfie. He immediately sized up the situation. "With pleasure," he replied. "But first I want to clear a misunderstanding. I'm not from Dublin." "The Conchilian would never dream of sending you a legionary who is city-bred and has no experience of rural Presidia. I'm from a small place myself, and therefore have a good knowledge of the difficulties and problems of rural Presidia." Four young legionaries were eventually appointed to be the new officers. Alfie explained their duties to them and made sure that they wouldn't fall into the same mistakes as their predecessors. Everything happened so fast that the old ladies were hardly able to keep up with the development. The parish priest, who had been somewhat diffident, confided in the young visitor, "It is very clear that you want nothing else than to help us. We would like to have you more often, and we will take any advice that you can give us." And so Alfie succeeded in reforming many groups which had failed to keep the rules. From north to south and east to west he travelled. It was a tiring but a happy life. Then he learned that his friend Seamus had offered himself as a Legion envoy to South America. He prepared himself for this great mission. He talked to his friends about it. John Murray, who had himself been Legion envoy for 12 years and had travelled in the United States and Mexico, gave Seamus precious advice. Above all, Seamus talked to Frank Duff, who'd been the soul of the Legion since its inception, and knew its spirit better than anybody else. He had, and still has, an amazing knowledge of religious conditions in many parts of the world. One day he said quite suddenly to Seamus Grace, "Would you like to take Alfie with you to South America?" Without the slightest hesitation, Seamus consented. He wrote to Alfie, and of course Alfie replied that he would gladly go. He told his mother, and shortly afterwards wrote, "My mother, in replying to my letter in which I told her the news, says she does not like to see me going so far away, but that I must go because that is what Our Lady wants. She reminds me that Our Blessed Lady's wishes must always come first." So in April 1953, Seamus and Alfie were officially appointed envoys of the Legion to South America. Alfie began studying Spanish. A priest who was teaching him honestly believed that Alfie was too young for the immoral climate of Caracas. And so came that historic day, July the 16th, 1953. They arrived at Colombia. The Legion had already been established there, and the new envoys were greeted with joyous expectations. It's impossible for me, in the space of time I have, to describe all the subsequent journeys of Alfie Lam. In fact, one could almost say with St. John that all the books of the world couldn't contain them. The territory was immense. South Argentina, Ecuador, Chile, Paraguay, Uruguay, Bolivia, as well as Colombia. In all these places, there were very few priests. Ignorance of religion was widespread. The masses fell an easy prey to Protestant evangelists who came by thousands from the United States, or to the communists whose agents were busily engaged in propaganda. First of all, of course, Alfie himself had to be trained. Especially, he had to perfect his Spanish. he didn't find it easy. But fortunately, there was a well-known and experienced Legion envoy, a lady from the Philippines, Joaquina Lucas, who took Alfie into her care. She tutored him. She was a lady of great holiness and an immensely attractive personality. She'd given up her position at the university to work for the Legion. Incidentally, she was the first ever Legion envoy who had never been to Dublin. She wrote to Dublin about Alfie's progress. Once they were assailed by a swarm of mosquitoes. The poor boy bled so much that I held out to him the awful prospect that he would have no blood left for real martyrdom. 4 months after leaving Dublin, Alfie wrote his first letter in Spanish to John Murray. He took part in the ordinary Legion work in Colombia. He continually urged the members to undertake more difficult work. This is a basic principle of the Legion. In every presidium, it is required that there should be at least 2 members who are engaged in more difficult work, more demanding work, than the others. And if this is done regularly, then the whole movement is inspired to undertake work which is more than ordinary. And so in Colombia, they visited hotels and worked on young women who were leading immoral lives and brought them back to understanding priests for confession and absolution. In the parishes, they went from home to home, not just from Catholic home to Catholic home, but literally from door to door. Nobody was passed by. Alfie was no hermit. He was interested in every individual. He liked to be in company. He was frequently united to his fellow legionaries by close personal friendship. His cheerfulness and keen sense of humor made him the soul of every company. He was musical. He would strum a Colombian guitar when visiting friends. Of course, he soon became known as Don Alfonso. His surname, translated into Spanish, soon gave him the nickname of the Little Lamb. What a coincidence that he was to die on the feast of St. Agnes. Seamus Gray soon got together extension teams to spread the Legion. He started presidia in towns which had been without a priest. In the Archdiocese of Cartagena, there were only 40 diocesan priests with a population of 1.5 million Catholics. Alfie became an envoy in his own right in the Marian year, 1954. Archbishop Echeverria of Ambato, Ecuador, invited him to start the Legion. Because of the nature of the country, there were unique difficulties here. But Alfie soon set to work. Almost immediately, he had started a presidium for men, which included a senator, a judge of the Supreme Court, and a school teacher. The rest were ordinary working men. One who's experienced the Legion in many parts of the world over the years realizes that this has been a feature of the movement, the way it bridges social and racial contrasts. People who would never have come together under other circumstances are found sitting side by side and working together in Presidio. To work among the Indians in Ecuador, Alfie started to learn their language. He found a nun who spoke it fluently and got her to translate the Legion prayers into the dialect. Bishop Echeverria called the Legion of Mary a prodigy and insisted that Alfie should come and address the bishops at their conference. The cardinal introduced the bishop, and then he spoke. And now, Your Excellencies, you will ask, how is that to be? Who is going to win priests and lay people for this idea? Who will prepare the ground? Who will set up the branches? Who will see to it that they remain faithful to the system? We bishops certainly have not the time to accomplish all that. Permit me, therefore, to present and recommend to you Mr. Alphonsus Lam, whom you see here beside me. In spite of his youth, he not only has a profound knowledge of the system of the Legion of Mary, but he also possesses the gift of explaining it to others and enthusing them with the idea. He's been working in my diocese for some weeks now, and what I have seen there has far surpassed my boldest expectations. I would never have thought it possible. In spite of the short period of time, it has already become evident that it is not merely a 9-day wonder. There is every indication that something solid and lasting has been accomplished. Mr. Lam has set up the Legion of Mary in my diocese. Within a few weeks, he will have consolidated it to such a point that he will be able to go elsewhere. I would suggest that in honor of the Marian year, the Legion should be accepted by all of us and extended to all parts of the country. Those ideas of the bishop were accepted. And so it happened. Alfie conducted a campaign throughout the country. The days and weeks and months and years which followed were filled with activity, which seems to be unbelievable, had we not the evidence for it. In 4 short years, Alfie did things which seemed to be completely superhuman. It is impossible here to recall all his travels. Hardly a news come that he was working in a certain region when it was learned that he was already thousands of miles away. Yet nowhere did he leave patchwork. Everywhere the branches of the Legion were solidly established and able to stand on their own 2 feet. This young man, who had to leave the Christian Brothers because of ill health, was now doing work many times more exacting than he would ever have had to do in the congregation. The disease, which the doctor had feared, now never attacked him. The field of his apostolate was widening all the time. Now it was to Indians, now to lepers, now to prisoners, and all the time to everybody. He wrote to Frank Duff, "I am so full of my work, and I have got to love the people here so much that it could not be otherwise." A legionary, having an idea of the mystical body, feels that the whole world belongs to him, and that when he moves to a new place, he is going to his own. There are many stories one could tell if time permitted, but here's just one. Alfie was on a bus, going to a place called Riobamba, 95 miles away. He describes himself what happened. I am convinced now that everything in the world happens to an envoy. We left Cuenca at 5 a.m. On the seat beside me was seated a young Indian girl, about 16 years old. And when we'd been on the road for about 2 hours, she fell over, almost on top of me. I thought it was a heart attack. But I almost went through the ground when someone said that she was having a baby. I had no idea what to do. In fact, she had her baby there, and we left her in the next village. Then there was a bus crash, but no one was hurt. Then the two drivers got fighting. I did the policeman for the occasion, separating the two and ordering them back into their buses. The journey lasted from 5 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. To bring the journey to a happy end, I got everybody in the bus to sing. One of the Indians had a guitar. The days and the months and the years which followed were filled with tremendous activity. In fact, unless we had evidence for it, we would hardly believe it. His apostolic zeal seemed to know no bounds. On the one hand, it seemed as if Alfie knew that he had not much time for his life's work, and that he must accomplish in a few years what others would do in decades. But on the other hand, the killing pace of his work may well have contributed to his untimely end. Just think of it. Every night, a different bed. Every day, different food. Often he had hardly time to eat. He could never take meals regularly. Only a giant in strength could have stood up to such a life indefinitely. And Alfie was no giant. He had an attack of dysentery, but that didn't prevent his spending some time in Peru. At times, the Concilium officers began to get quite worried. Had Alfie disappeared? Had something happened to the envoy? To another person, they might have sent a cable asking whether he was all right. But no one had any idea where Alfie was to be reached. So there was nothing to be done but to wait and hope. Anxiety once became very serious, but a thick airmail letter with a Brazilian stamp arrived in Dublin. The president of the Concilium opened it and read as follows. You must have been thinking that I had disappeared from the face of the earth. I don't know how many weeks have passed by since my last letter to you, but all I know is that the weeks past have been full of activity and mad activity. I travelled all Peru by air, by train, by bus, by lorry, and on foot. At times it was the scorching tropical sun of the Peruvian coast that molested us, and on other occasions it was almost impossible to resist the biting cold winds on the top of the Andes. At times I was within a few feet of the eternal snows of the Andes, some 14,000 feet over sea level. In a night's journey, I crossed the sacred lake of the Incas, 12,500 feet over sea level. I traveled by day and by night, but thanks be to God, I have suffered in no way as regards health. And he went on to relate the number of presidia which had been established. He ended, "At this moment I am in flight over the snow-covered Andes of Bolivia, some 17,000 feet up. About 20 minutes ago I left La Paz Airport with Monsignor Utiveros of Lima, en route to the Eucharistic Congress at Rio. We were seen off by a big crowd of La Paz legionaries who presented each of us with a large bouquet of flowers. I am writing this report in flight, as it is the only time that I have free. Alfie described that Eucharistic Congress as a wonderful experience. He attended all the night sessions and spent his days at the Legion booth interviewing cardinals and bishops. He described a mass at which 500,000 men received Holy Communion. At the Congress, he met bishops from other countries, including Brazil, Haiti, the West Indies, Cuba, Guatemala. His letters have a breathless quality about them. He had started something that was moving at an immense rate. And so he went to Brazil. There were already legionaries at work there. But the results, as usual, were remarkable. 25 presidia were set up within a month. Further development showed that this was not a mushroom growth, but a solid building. As a matter of fact, to this day, the work of the Legion in Brazil is quite remarkable. It's an epic of the church in our day. But I must pass on to mention especially Argentina. The Cardinal Archbishop of Rosario was convinced that the Legion of Mary was just what Argentina needed, that it was the ideal apostolate. So Alfie worked there. He found a home from home with the Irish Christian Brothers and went to see them at every opportunity. It is interesting to note that he met there the brother who had been with him in the novitiate. You may remember that I quoted his impressions of Alfie earlier on in this little talk. Now he gives his impressions again. He was a most welcome visitor. The change that had come over him during the years subsequent to his leaving the training college has been most marked. Gone were the boyish expression, the shyness, and the hesitant manner of making conversation. He had matured, spoke now so quietly and consistently about everything, particularly the Legion. He had such a fund of knowledge and experience. In a few short months, he had grasped the situation in Argentina, had sized up perfectly the political setup in the country, had analyzed its people, had learned more about the church and its needs than many people his senior, and living here much longer than he. At first there was no place for the Legion in Buenos Aires. That was to come later. Alfie wrote to his mother, "Argentina is the country most like Ireland that I have yet seen. There is green grass along the roadside. There are Irish people everywhere, and they speak English just as my grandfather spoke it. Tell me how you are passing the cold nights, if there is much turf left in the yard, if the March green grass is to be seen yet, and if the March wind makes waves in the fields like the storm on a lake." Then came Paraguay and Bolivia. Alfie's great longing, however, was to go to Russia to help in the conversion of that great country. Of course it was not to be. He wrote to Mr. Duff, "If we do not do something about Russia, we are tacitly agreeing that there is one impossibility that we can do nothing about. That would be lack of trust in God and His Holy Mother. If we say that time is not ripe, It is almost like accusing God of not being interested in saving the souls of the present generation. If we keep waiting, we will all pass into eternity, and the work will be left for others to do. Those who are familiar with the Legion of Mary will realize now that the apostolate to Russia has indeed begun. 1958 found Alfie in Uruguay. In the summer of that year, he wrote, "In 3 days' time, I will have passed 5 years in America, and then I shall enter into my 6th year, and perhaps my last year of envoyship. Sometime in 1959, I will end officially my envoyship. Plans? I have none. Ideas? I have plenty. I have one idea that has become a real obsession, and of course it depends on the good God to make a plan of action out for me. Marriage does not enter into my plan. What are my feelings at the thought of ending envoyship? Great happiness and a feeling of gratitude to God, who in his great love gave me this opportunity of doing this little service to his church. Of course, envoyship does not really end, as in this most blessed legion of ours, which is also of Mary, every day of one's life is a day of envoyship." Only 6 months after writing that letter, he officially closed his envoyship. On a sunny, hot morning in December 1958, when Alfie made his visit to the Archbishop of Cordoba, he afterwards met his companions in order to work out a program. They saw that he was ill. He soon became violently sick. They took him to bed. Late that same night, he was taken to hospital. The X-ray examination showed a bleeding ulcer at the stomach exit. For a whole week, he was given nothing but milk. "All the cows of Cordoba will run dry," he joked. He was taken to hospital in Buenos Aires. There, in a clinic of the Blue Sisters, he received hospitality and loving care. He spent Christmas in hospital. His patience and behavior edified everybody who met him. He continued to write his letters. To headquarters, he wrote, "You seemed to take my letter from Cordoba too seriously. I am in perfect health apart from the ulcer. It is true that I lost about 6 kilos, nearly 1 stone, but I was living on milk alone. My ulcer is doing fine. But some complications arose, something in the intestine. You mentioned the idea of my going home. Of course I would love to go home for a rest, but just now I don't think it is God's will. We are just coming to the most important part of the year for extension work. January, February, March are the real extension months. I have an appointment in Montevideo in the 3rd week in January. May 1959 bring many new victories to the Queen of the Legion. This is my last letter of 1958. It was dated December 30th. It was to be his last, and not only for 1958. On January the 9th, they operated on him. They discovered a virulent, malignant tumor. He was full of it. All his vital organs were affected. He was in terrible agony. The Irish ambassador came to see him every day and wrote to Dublin that Alfie's name was already a legend in the places where he had worked. The cardinal came himself to administer the last sacrament. The apostolic nuncio gave him his last blessing. He died on January the 21st, nearly 6 months before his 27th birthday, the feast of St. Agnes, who is called in the liturgy a lamb whiter than snow. Was there not here an exquisite sign of providence to glorify the death of one known throughout Latin America as El Cordero, the little lamb? His life has been written by Hilda Fertel, who was herself an envoy of the Legion. I knew Hilda very well, and I know how thrilled she was to hear the story of Alfie and to be able to write his biography. He says that if Alfie's cause of beatification should ever be introduced, he will be regarded as a completely new type of saint. It is not known, and very improbable besides, that he ever had an apparition or private revelation. Neither will anyone be able to say what state of prayer he reached, nor was he given to extraordinary works of penance. Idell Quinn did leave some spiritual diaries. We know about the resolutions she made during her retreats and meditations. But from Alfie, we have no such thing. That he attended Mass and received Holy Communion daily was as natural for him as it is for thousands of legionaries belonging to the Praetorian degree of membership. With this degree, which is freely chosen, members take on the obligation of daily Mass and Holy Communion, and daily recitation of the Rosary and of the Legion prayers, as well as some kind of office approved by the Church. To do his duty was Alfie's sole motto. One day, the Irish ambassador to Argentina asked him, "How do you really know that you are following your vocation?" Alfie replied, "I often wondered about it myself. I believe one has simply to go on doing what one is doing at the moment. Just do it." And of course, Alfie expressed it all himself. He summarized it all in that one phrase, "living the Legion." And doing what has to be done at every moment, not thinking of the past, not thinking of the future, accepting God's will for the present moment, abandoning oneself to divine providence, is, after all, the simple spirit of our Blessed Lady. Behold the handmaid of the Lord. It has been recommended in the most certain way by masters of the spiritual life, like St. John of the Cross, St. Teresa, Cossard, Abbot Chapman, Grew, and many others. Simply doing what one ought to do is sometimes quite a severe penance. It is certainly more perfect to write a letter when one feels very exhausted, or to hold a religious conversation when one is rather unwell. This was Alfie's way of life. This was a kind of penance that he thought Our Lady at Fatima was asking for. He understood that one cannot be holy without doing all one ought to do as perfectly as possible, and the best way of doing that is to strive after union with Mary. As a matter of fact, he found his spirituality in the handbook of the Legion of Mary. Those who are not familiar with the Legion promise might find here a summary of Alfie's way of life. We can imagine him saying this: "Most Holy Spirit, I, Alphonsus Lamb, desiring to be enrolled this day as a legionary of Mary, yet knowing that of myself I cannot render worthy service, do ask of thee to come upon me and fill me with thyself, so that my poor acts may be sustained by thy power and become an instrument of thy mighty purposes. But I know that thou who hast come to regenerate the world in Jesus Christ hast not willed to do so except through Mary. That without her we cannot know or love thee, that it is by her and to whom she pleases, when she pleases, and in the quantity and manner she pleases, that all thy gifts and virtues and graces are administered. And I realize that the secret of a perfect legionary service consists in a complete union with her who is so completely united to thee. I declare my entire dependence on her. She is the mother of my soul. Her heart and mine are one. And from that single heart she speaks again those words of old, "Behold the handmaid of the Lord," and once again, "Thou comest by her to do great things." Let thy power overshadow me, and come into my soul with fire and love, and make it one with Mary's love and Mary's will to save the world, so that I may be pure in her who was made immaculate by thee, so that Christ my Lord may likewise grow in me through thee, so that I with her, his mother, may bring him to the world and to the souls who need him, so that they and I, the battle won, may reign with her forever in the glory of the Blessed Trinity. That is the spirit of Alfie Lamb. That is the secret of his holiness. I will conclude with some words of his biographer, Miss Firtle. Whether he may be canonized or not, he is an ideal model for modern youth. He was a child of our time. He did not run away from the world. He tried to win it for God. He could swim, hunt, play the guitar, sing. He was never a killjoy. He was pure, but not a prude. Never did he make a show of his piety. Yet he utterly despised human respect. Every young person cannot go to foreign lands, though many are going to the underdeveloped countries nowadays to help there. Yet everyone can love Our Lady, everyone can be an apostle in the Legion of Mary, like Alphonsus Lamb or in some other organization. The life of Alphonsus Lamb was like a meteor. It flashes suddenly before us, soaring to giddy heights, but hardly have we admired its splendor than it is gone. But whereas a meteor leaves no trace, Alfie's work is thriving and flourishing in all the countries where he was active. The flame which consumed the Irishman, and which he knew how to enkindle in all those who surrounded him, has become a wildfire which has seized an entire continent.